Hey everybody, Carl Stern here. Thank you very much for joining me here on the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. Now, I'm going to be doing something special for the upcoming few weeks here at WrestlingObserver.com. Usually a lot of these shows run both at Wrestling Observer and at When It Was Cool, but I'm going to do some exclusive only shows for When It Was Cool for a while, but over here at Observer, I want to do a few weeks worth of what I consider my best shows. Now, you've probably never heard that. I don't think I've ever posted any of these over at Observer. I guess it's possible one or two might have got posted over here. But I've done some really, really in-depth shows called Saga of Specials. And there are several of these, and they are deep dives, really documentary style deep dives into wrestling. This is for pro wrestling nerds like myself who, you know, just don't want the superficial stuff. We've heard all the stories. We've heard all the shoot interviews. We've read all the books. And we still want something deeper. We want literally every single detail about an incident. So, for the next few weeks, I'm going to be running the Saga of Specials here, and I hope you'll listen to these, collect these. This is what I do over at When It Was Cool. If you think this is interesting and you want to support my Patreon and my website over there, this is what we do a lot over there. So, hope you'll consider that. But for you here, this is some really, really deep in there stuff. And again, I realize it's not for everybody. If you just, you know, are a superficial fan, you just like wrestling, but you know, got other things in your life, and I understand. But for us who are really, I mean, just pro wrestling has been our life, these shows are for you. These are deep, deep, deep dives. And boy, we get into the minutiae of some stuff. So I hope you'll check it out. Hope you'll enjoy it. Please don't forget, I have a book available at Amazon.com called Dragon King Carl's 1983 Pro Wrestling Omnibus. Check that out. Available now. Go to the front page of whenitwascool.com. Follow us on Facebook and all that good stuff. All the links are there. So now let's dive deep, deep, deep into the history of pro wrestling.
Excuse me, please. Let's don't talk negatively. Speaking of winners, surprise, surprise, whenitwascool.com is your home for retro pop culture articles and podcasts. To all our patron supporters, this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold just like you and me. Family friendly and fun, whenitwascool.com.
Hey everybody, this is pro wrestling historian Carl Stern. Perhaps you've known me as Dragon King Carl from WrestlingObserver.com. I do the Dragon King Carl Classic Wrestling Audio Show. I have my own website, WhenItWasCool.com, and the audio you're going to hear on this channel is selected shows from our pro wrestling history archives. These are in-depth biographies and stories about pro wrestling and in-depth history pieces. These all have been previously heard on our Patreon feed. I want to invite you to become a Patreon supporter at whenitwascool.com. Our supporters, again, have already heard these shows. There are 1,300 at the time I'm making this recording here, over 1,300 podcast available in that feed. I think you'll find it a super value. You can come on at the $1 or $5 level to begin with, and that'll kind of get your foot in the door, and you can see what all we have to offer. Hundreds and hundreds of shows available at that level. Right now, enjoy a sample of what our Patreons have known for a long time. We offer over at whenitwascool.com. I can't wait to see you there. Now enjoy this show.
The When It Was Cool Podcast Network. Retro pop culture. Informative and fun and family friendly. Support us on Patreon at whenitwascool.com.
You're going to talk about wrestling. That's redneck talk.
You know, it's my great pleasure right now to introduce to everybody a man who really needs no introduction.
Carl.
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 Dragon.
King.
Carl.
I'm not calling the fans geeks. I'm not calling them rednecks, tobacco chewing nothing, because I've done all that myself.
Carl.
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 Dragon.
King.
Carl.
In your dreams, you will see me.
Dragon.
King.
Carl.
Somebody say something.
When we're bad, we're real bad. And when we're good, we're real good.
Dragon King. Come.
And this is for you, Fannie Mae. Solid gold, baby, just like you and me. Excuse me, please, let's don't talk negatively.
Hey, everybody, Carl here with a Patreon special, an extra. This is this was sent in for the mailbag, but I thought it would make a good standalone show. I like these thought experiment type shows. In fact, on the next mailbag show coming up, I have a great one. I think Andrew sent it in, and it'll be coming up, or I'm not sure when I put the show up. You've either just heard it on the mailbag show, or you'll be hearing it shortly on the mailbag show. But one way or another, we got two here recently. But this one, I thought, I didn't get it in on the mailbag show because I recorded it first, but I thought it was a really great question. And I thought it bared spending some time with because it's pretty cool. And hey, we're in COVID-19. Shouldn't it be COVID-20? Because that'd be a lot better. This is COVID-20. But whatever. Anyway. The question is basically, what happens if Vern Gagne does, in fact, give the AWA world title to Hulk Hogan? Does it change history? Are things different? How does this happen? Like what does it change anything? And I thought it was a really cool question because there's a lot to kind of unpack with this, and I want to spend some time with it. So let's go back in time, because I think maybe some people aren't entirely aware that really when you talk about Hulk Hogan winning the world championship, the AWA world championship, we're actually kind of talking about two different times. Both of them, each of them a year apart. And I myself even have trouble sometimes confusing the two. And, you know, you probably in your mind right now, you see Hulk Hogan stumbling around the ring, holding the big AWA World Heavyweight Championship, the one that they call the inmate belt because, well, it was actually made by inmates. It was the one famously held by Nick Bockwinkel, and it's the same one that Stan Hansen ran over with the truck or the tractor or whatever the story was when he had it for a moment, that belt. And but this happened actually twice in history. So Hulk Hogan, let's go back in time. We're talking the early 80s here. We're specifically talking 1982 and 1983, and let's just kind of see where the world was at that point in time as far as Hulk Hogan and where he fits in the wrestling world. So we're going to take the earlier one first. We're going to talk about 1982 first. And the match is actually April 18th, 1982. It's in St. Paul, Minnesota. And it's always been sort of interesting to me as I put together this Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling zone at the website with all these dates and stuff. I've put in some AWA stuff. I still have tons more AWA stuff to put in. But it was always kind of interesting to me that, and I've never been to Minneapolis, St. Paul. I've never been there in my life. Eric, from Wrestling with the Dog, he lives in Minnesota. I'm sure he's been there before. But to me, you know, in my mind, I see like Minneapolis is the dominant bigger city, and St. Paul is kind of like an adjacent city itself, but Minneapolis is kind of the superior city in size and scope. But going through all these results, it looks to me like with the AWA, as far as the AWA, especially in the 70s and 80s is concerned, that St. Paul drew bigger crowds. It seemed like it was the more populous arena for AWA to come in. So I always thought that was kind of interesting. And so that's where the first match takes place. It is, again, April 18th, 1982. Nick Bockwinkel has been the AWA World Champion since May 19th, 1981. And what had happened, of course, you remember Vern Gagne, old Vern Gagne, wouldn't drop the belt to anybody, so he just retires with the title, and it's awarded to Nick Bockwinkel, which was a very cheesy way to do it. But Bockwinkel had been the champion now for about a year, and Hulk Hogan is very popular this time. So this is right about the time Hulk Hogan is breaking into mainstream popularity. He's becoming more than just a very popular pro wrestler. Now, he had already been working a lot of shots. He started out in Florida. He worked for a while in Ron Fuller's Pensacola promotion. He went to Memphis for a while, worked in Georgia, back down to Florida, and over did some shots in St. Louis. Had already been picked up by the WWF to do some dates there, and was touring Japan in between. In fact, right now, during this time period we're talking about, he was predominantly wrestling mostly in the AWA and touring New Japan Pro Wrestling. In fact, he's touring New Japan Pro Wrestling very frequently. He's spending a lot of time over there, but he's also doing shots at Madison Square Garden and some of the bigger arenas for WWF as well. But he's about to become popular beyond pro wrestling, and that's because of Rocky III. So let's talk about Rocky for just a moment, kind of put you back in time in case you're a little too young to remember this, or it's been a long time ago now, so maybe you've forgotten about it. But it was a super impactful movie series. It's the Sylvester Stallone's boxing movies. And so Rocky I, the first Rocky movie, was honestly aimed at older adults, at adults. It was a boxing drama. Okay, so I was born in 1971, and Rocky III came out in 1981. So I was like, I was actually 9 going on 10 years old in that summer when that movie came out. So I was the perfect age for this, but I was too young for Rocky. It was aimed for older people. It was dramatic. Rocky II, kind of the same way. But Rocky III was much more pop culture, okay, because it brought in Mr. T as Clubber Lang. And by the way, it's by far and away Mr. T's greatest role. If you've never watched Rocky III, or you have in your mind Mr. T typecast as, you know, I pity the fool and some of those A-Team lines and stuff like that, or you only know him from A-Team or some of his wrestling appearances, well, you missed the best thing Mr. T did. Now, some would argue some of the earlier movies he was in, but no, it's just Rocky III because he's perfect. Clubber Lang is a great, just a heel, hateable heel character. He is cuts the best promos. I didn't insert them in here, but go on YouTube and just search up Clubber Lang promos, and they're awesome. He was a great heel. He was very flashy. Mr. T was already gaining a lot of pop culture relevance himself. He had done the world's greatest barroom bouncer or whatever. And so he had a gimmick going where he was a real-life tough guy, supposedly. And this movie only increased that like a gillionfold. So Hulk Hogan didn't have a big starring role in this movie. He just had a scene in it. And it was the scene where he was playing a professional wrestler named Thunderlips. And it was very over the top, and it was very cheesy. And it was certainly not aimed at the like my parents, which, you know, Rocky and Rocky II kind of were. Rocky III and Rocky IV were aimed more at teens, more at my age group. You had the great Survivor song, Eye of the Tiger, that was the theme song to this. It was a hit in pop culture, a big smash hit on the radio. At that age, man, it was an awesome song. This is the world where Hulk Hogan's at right now. Principal photography for Rocky III began on March 30th, 1981. You may have saw this in your latest When It Was Cool newsletter. I'd put all this in there working on this show that you're hearing now. So if you haven't downloaded the PDF or looking at it now, you go, it's all in there. So March 30th, 1981, principal photography begins on Rocky III, which in 1982 would launch both Hulk Hogan and Mr. T into mainstream pop culture stardom. On April 2nd, 1981, it's a weird event that took place. A bomb scare at the Los Angeles Sports Arena forces the evacuation of 4,000 people. And this is the cast and crew of Rocky III. It's the background actors, stuntmen, production, all this. So this is a huge bunch of people. I don't know if Hulk Hogan and Mr. T were there. I presume they were, along with Sylvester Stallone. But that delays the movie for a bit. I don't know why the bomb threat was called in. I don't know what the deal about that was. But nonetheless, on May 26, 1982, so the movie is now filmed over the course of 1981. It's now ready to premiere in May 26, 1982. It's the Los Angeles premiere, starring Mr. T and Hulk Hogan. It's the third film of the Sylvester Stallone boxing saga and significantly increases the pop culture awareness of both Mr. T and Hulk Hogan. And then it is released nationwide on June 2nd, 1982. And it is a huge hit. It brought in a little over $16 million the opening weekend. It goes on to gross a lot more than that. And Mr. T and Hulk Hogan are now beyond just wrestling, beyond just television. They are huge, gigantic stars. And so this is the world we're talking about now, this very year. So it hasn't come out yet. I mean, it's a month away, or less than a month away from this, but they're already doing pre-publicity. It's already known that Hulk Hogan's in a movie. It's all that's out there. The song "Eye of the Tiger" has already been released. It's already skyrocketing up the charts. Hulk Hogan's using it as his entrance music. I mean, he's getting red hot, no doubt about it. So there in St. Paul on April 18th, 1982, it looks like Hulk Hogan wins the AWA title. And he had been very active in the AWA up to this point. Nick Bockwinkel had been up to this point really feuding with Jerry Lawler. He had been working a lot down in Memphis, but here we are back up in the main AWA promotion. And it looks like to all parties involved that Hulk Hogan wins the title. But it's the good old dusty finish before really the dusty finish was popularized. I guess this is the Stanley Blackburn finish, because Blackburn awards the belt back to Bockwinkel. And what happened was Bobby Heenan managed Nick Bockwinkel, and it was a terrible finish. I mean, it wasn't good. It didn't make the promotion look good at all. It was really one of those finishes where instead of putting the heat on Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel, which is what you want to do, it put heat on the AWA for a stupid finish. I mean, even the kayfabe explanation of it made them look incompetent. And what had happened, Hulk Hogan was using both the leg drop and the axe bomber as his finishers at that time. And so he had actually hit Bockwinkel with an axe bomber and then slams him and goes down to pin him. And Bobby Heenan reaches through the ropes and hits him in the back of the head with a chain. And the referee didn't see it, but that would play into it. Hulk Hogan recovers. They fight a little bit more. Ends up, Hulk Hogan hits the boot, hits the leg drop, although it's a screwed-up leg drop because the referee gets in the way. And it's one of those bad deals where you got a special referee, and it's Lord James Blears, and he's old, and he's in the way, and Hogan has to shift and awkwardly hit this leg drop. And it looks like he's won, but then it goes back, and they do the old DQ. Okay, well, we disqualified them for the use of the foreign object. And so Stanley Blackburn takes the title back and gives it to Nick Bockwinkel. Well, this is a bad deal because, again, you watch the match. The people in the arena go nuts. Hogan's celebrating with the belt. This finish makes no sense if this is real. They retroactively screwed him out of the title. And it wasn't even like, I mean, this was just like very mundane cheating in wrestling's terms anyway. And then they have Hulk Hogan cut this very crybabyish promo at the next TV where he's like, I just, you know, I gave it my best. I done the best I could, and I still couldn't get the title. So I quit. I lost my smile, and I'm going home, basically. And I'm about to play those promos for you, the post-match promos for Hulk Hogan, as well as Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel. And I know this runs just a little bit long, but I encourage you to stick with it because they're really good promos. And you'll see that you'll be left after these promos going, okay, well, that's it. This is where Hulk Hogan goes then to Japan, to New Japan Pro Wrestling, and then ultimately goes to the WWF because he didn't get the AWA title. But that's not what happened. That's a year down the road, which makes this even more baffling in hindsight. But let's listen to the promos.
At this time, ladies and gentlemen, I would like to bring in the man who, in my opinion, is the world's heavyweight champion. Over 28,000 people in St. Paul, Minnesota, a week ago, certainly agreed with that consensus opinion. You've got to be heartbroken, disappointed. I don't know if words mean a whole lot at this point, but Hulk Hogan, you've had a week to think about all of this. Where are we at?
You know something, Mean Gene? Just like my main man, B.B. King, said, every day I got the blues. Well, you know something? I feel really bad right now, Mean Gene. Three times out, I stepped in the center of the ring and proved myself a better man. This last time, all I did was go to my people. I said, stand behind me one more time. That's all I need. Just one more time, get behind me, and I'll bring it home. Yes, I did beat the man in the center of the ring. Yes, I did prove that I'm the superior being. But that's not enough, Mean Gene.
That is not enough. Hulk Hogan, Stanley Blackburn overruling Lord James Blears. You had the belt. The fans went absolutely, totally crazy. And Hulk, I know this is tough for you to live with.
You know something, Mean Gene? I had the belt in my hand. They gave the thing to me. And then Stanley Blackburn took it upon himself to make the decision to steal the belt from me. It was like in the center of the arena in Rome when Caesar put his thumb down. I heard 20-some thousand people boo. I felt the pain run through my body for everybody in there. It's like when I was a little pup, Mean Gene. I lost somebody in my family very close to me. That's the same feeling I have now. I cannot live with it anymore.
You say you cannot live with it. Can you be more specific, Hulk Hogan?
I'm going to get real specific, Mean Gene. Time and time again, everybody knows the Hulkster never tells a lie. I came out here, gave it my all, every move, 100% dedication. And you know something? I feel that I beat Nick Bockwinkel, but that is not enough. I let my people down, the people that stood behind me from day one. So I'm going to take it upon myself now, Mean Gene. I'm leaving the AWA for good. I don't deserve to wrestle here anymore.
Hulk Hogan, do you have any idea what you are saying? Ladies and gentlemen, I am in shock. Hulk Hogan stating he is leaving the AWA. He doesn't deserve to wrestle here any longer. Hopefully we'll have more on that next weekend. Have a good one. So long. Some kind of a match indeed. Bobby Heenan and Nick Bockwinkel, as I privately told Hulk Hogan, perhaps the darkest time is just before dawn. What a big match. Very controversial in the opinion of many.
My entire career, one of the most frequent questions asked is, what was your toughest match? And until recently, there were several. But I can stand here unequivocally and tell the entire sports world that the match you just witnessed was my toughest. I felt like I was knocked out a couple of different times, only to come back from the stars and the blurriness. But I want you to know one thing. If Hulk Hogan, because you have left, you felt you humiliated yourself, you failed to get the job done, that's right. Because you did not get the job done. You knew you were going down when I had the sleeper, and you intentionally, right in front of 28,000 people in Stanley Blackburn, threw me over the top rope so you would not lose face. And you have now picked up your marbles, and you have gone home.
You know, he makes a big speech. I'm never going to wrestle here again. I'm this, I'm that. No one knows where he is. They can't find him. Right now, his mother's probably on her hands and knees trying to coax him out from under the bed. Floor's all wet from tears. He doesn't answer the phone. No mail to his home. No one can find him. He's hiding. Well, I don't blame you for hiding, Hogan. You were embarrassed. You came out there and gave 200%. You hit this man with everything you had, and you still did not leave the ring the champion of the world. And you never will, Hogan. You did the best thing you could have done was take off and hide. And I'm glad, and I'm going to speak for the family. I am personally glad we've seen the last of the incredible Hulk Hogan.
Well,
let me tell all the fine wrestling fans one last word. Hogan, I do now know something. Having gone through hell and the toughest match of my career with you, considered the most promising man in the world in this sport, I now know how to beat you. And if I ever get my hands on you again, if you think you were humiliated before because of what you failed to accomplish, you will be humiliated even more. Because I will take and accomplish the one thing that nobody else has done. I will defeat you, pin you, and beat you.
You better stay hiding, Hogan.
I thank you very much, gentlemen. Bobby Heenan. Jack Lance. A lot of talk over the past few weeks regarding the incredible Hulk Hogan.
You mean incredible Sulk Hogan. You see, what happens is the man failed to get the job done. Now, you can put it any way you want. His explosive makeup, you know what he is. He cannot control himself. He blew it. He blew it completely. He couldn't get the job done. So what's he? Is he at home now? Mommy's fixing bacon and eggs.
Well, you know what amazes me? He comes into the ring with a shirt that says, "We want the belt." He's talking about Hulkamania. I'm going to do this for the people. I'm going to win the championship for the people. Where is he right now? Do his people know where he is? The Incredible Hulk, he's sulking someplace. He's the Incredible Sulk Hogan. He's probably at home in Venice Beach, California, and his mother's back has just gone out trying to get him out from under the bed. He's probably hiding under there whining and crying. Big 6'8", 380 pounds of him whining and crying because he didn't get the job done. He didn't let you down or me down. Wait. He let you humanoids down, and you're used to being down, so you enjoy it. Hulk Hogan, we've heard the last of you, seen the last of you, and I can breathe a little easier. Wahoo McDaniels goes in the same vein. Him and Von Raschke and everybody else, especially the Indian, it takes the ring post for him to get a victory. He's talking about how he beat the world's champion. He wants this and he wants that. Hey, pal, go back and knit some blankets and stay out of our business.
Let me just say one thing. Wahoo McDaniels, since Hulk Hogan, see if you can borrow his crying towel. Because if you can only accomplish a victory by using a ring post, you're a sad representation, not only of your race, of, as far as I'm concerned, the sport of professional wrestling, because you are a total failure.
Blackjack Lanza.
And he has no business number one contender. No way. Anyone who breaks the rules like that man does doesn't deserve to be in the ring with a gentleman like Nick Bockwinkel.
Can you picture Hulk Hogan's mom sitting at home with that big 340-pound goon on her lap, and she's patting him on the back while he's whining and crying, and he's talking about Nick Bockwinkel and the championship? I'm not a crier. I'm the first guy to admit if I lose, but he's the biggest crybaby I've ever seen.
I don't know. Maybe next to Wahoo. Very unlikely to me, Bobby Heenan. Blackjack Lanza to Nick Bockwinkel. More action after this. Stay tuned.
So what then happens is, yes, Hulk Hogan is leaving the AWA for a few weeks. He's going over to New Japan, and he actually does several tours of New Japan there throughout 1982 and into early 1983. He goes to New Japan for about 2 or 3 weeks at a time. He comes back for 2 or 3 weeks, wrestles in the AWA. In fact, he's working all over the AWA. In fact, he has a pretty big feud again with Nick Bockwinkel. He's working regularly against Jesse the Body Ventura and Ken Patera and Bobby Heenan and whoever Heenan, you know, has come up as well. And so he's working there. He doesn't, you know, and he goes away and comes back and goes away and comes back. And they actually have several high profile matches in this time. And so the promo accomplished nothing other than making Hulk Hogan sound like a whiner, and it really didn't strengthen Bockwinkel and Heenan because it completely made it look like the AWA was protecting them. Well, Vern Gagne, and who knows what he's thinking, over the years I've listened to shoot interviews with Greg Gagne, I've heard, you know, from Hulk Hogan, neither of which are are very consistent in their stories, neither of which are probably, you know, are speaking about stuff 40 years old that they probably can't even remember anyway. Hogan's first book, which is packed full of interesting fiction, and Vern Gagne, we all know he lied about most everything up until he started getting dementia, and then he didn't know anything, and then he died. And so nobody really has a verifiable version of what happens next. You know, you get bits and pieces, versions of stories, and so who knows the reality, but it goes something like this. Vern Gagne, there now in 1983, specifically we're talking about a year later, April of 83. So Hogan's been in there. He's been working Ventura a lot against Ken Patera, a lot against Dr. D. David Schultz. So he's right in there and going back and forth to New Japan as well. So he's right in there, and the story, conventional story history, is that Vern Gagne is wanting to put the world title on Hulk Hogan, even though Hogan matches nothing that the like Vern Gagne likes, okay? Yes, he uses people like Jesse Ventura. Yes, he uses people like Ken Patera, but not as the world champion. His world champion, you got to remember, Vern come from the era where Vern's whole story was that he was an accomplished, legit amateur wrestler, decorated amateur wrestling champion, who came into pro wrestling when Lou Thesz had a lock on everything. The two didn't get along. There was a contingent that wanted Vern Gagne to be the NWA champion. Lou Thesz said, nope, ain't happening. And Fred Kohler ends up creating a U.S. title to go on Vern Gagne. That infuriates the NWA. Some of the members, they are accusing Kohler of pushing Gagne over Thesz. He almost gets kicked out of the NWA for it. They argue about it. They finally just allow it to go on. Then ultimately, Vern Gagne just he's feels like he is entitled to the NWA world title. Honestly, at that period of time, he probably was. But the problem was, Lou Thesz, for all of his reputation, maybe deservedly so, of being this great hooker, shooter, and whatever, he didn't actually have the true credentials. Now, he was, a lot of really good hookers and shooters believed in Lou Thesz and probably taught him a lot of stuff, but Vern Gagne, we knew, was real. He had the accomplishments. Could he have beat Lou Thesz in a shoot? There's a very strong likelihood that he could have. So it ends up, the formation of the AWA ends with basically Vern saying, look, this is it. The challenge is there. Either defend the championship against me or don't. And if you don't, we're going to consider that forfeited. Pat O'Connor was the world champion at the time, who, of course, was a very close person to Sam Mushnick there. He was Mushnick's champion. And O'Connor, of course, he's not going to do that. And so in August 1960, Vern Gagne awards himself the AWA world title. And there, from that point forward, 10 title reigns later, Vern Gagne finally gives it up to Nick Bockwinkel. And that's where our story's at here. When we get to April 24th, 1983, the second match. I don't know how much reality there is to Vern Gagne was going to give the belt to Hogan. Now, the story again, the supposed legendary story, the historic story, is that Vern's going to do it, but he wants a piece of Hulk Hogan's merchandising. And by piece, all of Hulk Hogan's merchandising is how the story's told, and a piece of his Japan tours as well, which are extremely lucrative. And Hogan's like, why? And by merchandising, by the way, in 1983, we're talking about T-shirts, Hulkamania T-shirts. And Hogan's like, I'm doing that already. Why would I give you a piece of it to hold your crappy belt that was made by a bunch of prisoners? No. And so he says no. Allegedly, this ends up with Vern in a front face lock and Hogan saying, I told you nope. And I meant nope. Well, who knows how much of that's real. Oh, the scuffle probably is real. There's enough witnesses to that, that say that did happen. But for whatever reason, we get this second match, this second almost Hogan wins the title. See, again, most people think it's just one. It's actually two. Hogan beats Dick Bockwinkel April 24th, 1983 in Minneapolis, Minnesota. This is the Super Sunday show. It was a no DQ match. However, AWA President Stanley Blackburn, unable to disqualify Hogan for throwing Bockwinkel over the top rope, strips Hogan of the title anyway and returns it to Bockwinkel right after the match. So it was a complete screw job. Now, it wasn't a double cross or anything like that. This was the planned finish. There wasn't a shoot or nothing like that. Although throughout wrestling history, one would, you know, that wouldn't be surprising, but it was another screwball finish. I mean, it was twice that Hulk Hogan in a year's time, in Minneapolis, St. Paul, the two cities there, where you've no wonder AWA starts going down the drain at this point, because I mean, if you're in Minneapolis, St. Paul, Hulk Hogan's the world champion. I mean, the AWA looks terrible in this. And, you know, shortly after this, as a matter of fact, it is, let's see here, Jumbo Tsuruta's title reign was just a few months later. It was in February 23rd, 84. Then that's when it goes to Tsuruta and then Rick Martel. Then to Stan Hansen, who takes the inmate belt, runs over it with a tractor, and sends it back to Nick Bockwinkel, says, there's your belt back. Awards it again to Nick Bockwinkel. Poor Nick Bockwinkel, such a great wrestler, such a great talker, such a great overall presentation. He just doesn't get these good, definitive championship starts. I mean, it's just not. And then, you know, by that point, AWA is really going down the drain. You get Hennig for a while, and then you get it to Jerry Lawler, and then everything really falls apart. Yes, you have ultimately Larry Zbysko, Mr. Saito, and then Zbysko again. But for all intents and purposes, it's, you know, I think many people kind of look at this as being the end. You know, it may have kicked a few times afterwards, but this was largely the end of it. And I do think it has something to do with the fact. Remember, by the time this second match comes around in April of 83, you know, Rocky III is, you know, has made Hulk Hogan a superstar. And he's a superstar in Japan. He's done these matches in Madison Square Garden. Okay, to wrap this back around to the question, what happens if he gets the title? The AWA needs Hogan a lot more than Hogan needs the AWA at this point. So now the question becomes, well, which of these two matches do you want this to be? Because I think things are radically different with the choice. The second match, the April 24th, 1983 Super Sunday match from Minneapolis, okay, if you go with Hogan there, if, in fact, Hogan tells Vern, if the story's true, and he says, I tell you what, Vern, you can have part of my T-shirt money. Yeah, right. You can have part of my Japan money. It ain't happening. And I'll be your champion. And he was hot in AWA. He had no shortage of people to defend against. Well, McMahon is already going national at this point. He's already going around trying to buy up TV time slots. He's taking people out. And, of course, we know he hits AWA first and hardest. He gets Hogan. He gets Ventura. He gets Mean Gene Okerlund. He gets Dr. D. David Schultz. He was Tito Santana in AWA at this point, did he come from somewhere else? I know Tito was there right before, but maybe he didn't go with that initial wave. But he ends up getting Ken Patera as well, and so on and so forth. I mean, they all go. Anybody that's of any tremendous value ends up there in the WWF. If Hogan gets that title at second go around, it's no different. In fact, it's worse because Hogan may not drop the belt on the way out. Hogan's still going to the WWF. If you go by this second title reign. there ain't no stopping him, because all Vince McMahon has to do, whether he's truthful or not, is say, well, not only can you have your t-shirt money, man, we're going to make LGN action figures. We got this deal working with MTV where we're going to have wrestling albums. You know, we got these big plans for these super cards. We're going to build the promotion around you. You're going to be headlining Madison Square Garden, you know, every month instead of the St. Paul Civic Center. You know, what are you going to do? Right. And McMahon, at least early on, still let Hogan go do his Japan tours and stuff. So Vern Gagne didn't have a hope and a prayer of keeping Hogan. If you go by this second date, April 24th, 83, if at that point he said time, he would have been screwing himself even worse, because Hogan would have probably took the belt to the WWF. So, I mean, because your next title change is not until Jumbo Tsuruta in February 1984. Well, Hogan's already been WWF champion for about a month at that point, beating Iron Sheik. He come in right there in December of 1983, came in and did the deal where, you know, back when he got hurt, he's coming to take his place against the Iron Sheik, and he wins. And from there, it's, you know, it's Hulkamania and all that good stuff. So the second one is a terrible option for the AWA. In fact, I don't know that it doesn't make it go down quicker. Who do you go? Let's say Hogan does in December 1983, you know, and some of the other guys did it to him, you know, Jesse Ventura being one of them. When McMahon called, they answered. So Hogan, he gets the call. He's got the belt. Who do you go to next? You give it back to Bockwinkel, right? You hand him, you know, yet again, the world title, and then history goes on the same as it ever was. Maybe Jumbo Tsuruta doesn't get that little run that was bought for him. I mean, I guess you go Bockwinkel and then Rick Martel there in May of 84. But so really, AWA-wise, nothing changes other than they look bad again. And it might accelerate the downfall a little bit. I don't know that it would or wouldn't have. They were already doing that to themselves at that point. Hogan would have probably had business a little stronger, a little hotter than it was without him. But I don't know. I mean, Hogan would have still been, you know, spending as much time in Japan. I mean, I looked over those New Japan tours. He was spending, it's about 50-50 what his time he's spending in Japan versus here in the States. So, you know, I think it would have been all around a bad decision. So let's back up. Let's say, what if instead he changes the title on April 18th, 1982? Okay, so now, if you believe the story, and I don't, that Vince McMahon Sr. was all mad at Hogan for taking that Rocky III movie and fires him on account of it and blah, 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 I don't believe that story is in any way accurate, but let's just again take the legend and say that's true. So Hogan may have had some resentment there, although Vince Jr. is taking over the company. So maybe he does want the belt in April of 1982. Okay, so he's still got these New Japan commitments, still has everything pretty much on target, but he might not. He's still a year and a half at this point away from McMahon throwing the offer out to him, you know, a year and a few months away. So he's got more time to do some really good business, and he's got some people there to do some really good business with. Obviously, there's return stuff against Dick Bockwinkel that's probably going to draw pretty good. Again, Dr. D. David Schultz, and he had a good hot program. Jesse Ventura and Ken Patera, maybe Crusher Blackwell in there as well, or Jerry Blackwell, as he's called in AWA. You've got some potential stuff to do good. Now, August of 1982, you know, 4 months after that took place, that's when Otto Vons comes along and says, Jorgen Fjords. I don't know if he said that or not, but anyway, he buys the AWA World title for a hot minute. I'm betting with Hogan on top after all the concessions made, that doesn't happen. Or maybe it does. Maybe Vern is so out there that, like, while Hogan's gone on a tour of Japan, he just gives Otto the belt for a minute and has Hogan come back in and beat Otto for the belt. And maybe, you know, maybe Hogan's cool with that plan. Maybe he's not. I'm betting he's probably not cool with that plan. But Otto Vons doesn't get the championship, which, you know, he lost it back to Nick Bockwinkel a couple of months later in 1982. So we got to consider at least that none of that happens. And again, that really doesn't change history that much. If you take Otto Vons out or leave Otto Vons in, I don't know that it makes any difference in the world. But AWA has the chance to become stronger. Now, the question is, in that 1 year's time, between a year and a half time, between April of 1982 and the fall of 1983, when Vince McMahon comes calling, has AWA business picked up significantly enough to hold Vince McMahon off for a while? Okay, so Rocky III's hit and it's red hot, but you're trusting that Vern Gagne is going to keep that fire burning, okay? Vince McMahon kept that fire burning. He piggybanked off of Rocky III with what? The Rocket Wrestling deal, MTV, bringing Cyndi Lauper in, playing up the friendship of Mr. T and Hulk Hogan. And, again, Mr. T is tied to the city of Chicago, which is an AWA city, but does Vern do that? That seems very counterintuitive, certain Vern Gagne do. Vern Gagne bringing in Mr. T in Chicago to team with Hulk Hogan. Maybe if you got the right booker. I don't know that Vern goes for that. But Vince did. Vince was smart. Vince also had, up until he murdered somebody, a red-hot Jimmy Superfly Snuka. So that was tacked on as well. He was riding that as well. The times were changing, and certainly Vince McMahon at that time in that era, and it's hard to believe we're talking about the same Vince McMahon that's around in 2020, that's 70-something years old and ain't got a clue no more, how to make anybody a pop culture star. Back then, he did. Back then, it would have worked. Back then, he hit all the notes. He hit the Madison Square Garden. He hit, all this MTV stuff. Roddy Piper really made it work, whereas Vern, I think, is going to keep doing straight wrestling. He's just got a guy that had a bit part in a Rocky movie in there. I think Hogan, if anything, tires of that, and here's the call of Hollywood. Maybe he tries to pick up other roles. I think a lot of the reason Hulk Hogan really didn't follow up Rocky III immediately with a bunch of movie roles, and I didn't know he did stuff later on, these lower B movies and stuff, but I don't think one of the reasons he didn't really dive so deeply into stuff like the A-Team, he could have had a TV show, action TV show in the 80s, definitely, but he was so busy being Hulk Hogan in the WWF and rock and wrestling and making all this money and still going to Japan some and all that, he didn't have time really to do it. Really until we get Jesse Ventura in Predator, we don't have another big wrestler movie hit. Maybe Hogan leaves wrestling altogether and goes and tries to do that for a while. I'm not sure. But you're asking me if I'm to say this is a business-changing situation, you're asking me to trust that Vern Gagne is going to follow up Rocky III, Hulk Hogan winning the AWA title with something really interesting that's going to keep the momentum going. He's certainly not going national. He's certainly not going to go try to take up, TV stations all over the country to get his Hulk Hogan on there like Vince McMahon did. I think it ends up hurting everybody involved. In the short term, for a year or so, AWA is stronger. Then Hogan, I think, is still ultimately going somewhere, probably to Japan, quite frankly, or Hollywood. WWF, maybe he makes a bigger, stronger play for Kerry Von Erich, who is kind of who he really wanted all along. Kerry ain't going to be the success that Hogan is. I mean, personally or any other way, he's just not. He's not going to last as long as Hogan, best case scenario. So WWF doesn't hit as strong either. You don't have the MTV connection. You don't have the rock and wrestling connection, I don't think. And if you do, it's at a much lower level. Do you even have a WrestleMania? I mean, Jimmy Snuka's, you know, murdering Nancy Argentina regardless, right? I mean, there's nothing about any of this that changes that fact. So maybe he tries to build off of Snuka, and that's got a limited shelf life. And after that, there's only, you know, so much he can do there. So in answer to your question, in my opinion, Hulk Hogan winning the AWA world title is bad for everybody. It's bad for the AWA ultimately. Short term, it's better for them. They're the only ones that really benefit this short term. It is terrible for WWF. It certainly significantly hurts them. Wrestling never hits that big red hot boom period in the 80s. I still think business does very good. It's still very strong. Maybe the territories survive longer and wrestling goes a whole different direction. Wouldn't that be interesting? Maybe that's a topic for a whole other show where we continue this thought and say, well, does somebody else pick up the slack? Does somebody else get a big idea? Maybe it's Crockett. Maybe Dusty. I mean, Dusty certainly had those ambitions. Who knows? It's amazing to think about how one day, one night, or in this case, possibly two nights, but it's amazing to think, had things been different on April 18th, 1982, in St. Paul, Minnesota, what would wrestling have been like? It's a very interesting question. Well, I hope you've enjoyed this little thought experiment and a little history down the road for you. Do check out the Ultimate History of Pro Wrestling Zone at whenitwascool.com. I have put lots and lots. Well, if you've been reading the newsletter, you know, last month I put 106 pages worth of material on the website. This month, I'm sure it will be close to that again. I'm entering data every opportunity I get. In fact, I'm going through right now my Florida record book by Mark James and entering in title changes and world title appearances and any attendance over 5,000 people between the years of 1977 and 1985. So that will very shortly be entered. I'm a good 3/4 of the way through that book. Then I got a lot more to do. So I hope you're enjoying it. Ultimate History Pro Wrestling Zone at whenitwascool.com. Thank you so much for the question. That was wonderful. That was a lot of fun. And I'll see you here again soon with another show.
whenitwascool.com is your source for the best in retro pop culture. When It Was Cool features articles and podcasts on retro TV and movies, toys, action figures, pro wrestling, food, video games, and more. Hit the Patreon button to support us and get instant access to hundreds of premium podcasts and features. Family friendly and fun. WhenItWasCool.com.